On this 14th day of June, I have finally succeeded in capturing an ideal subject. My long search in the Javanese jungles is ended. My experiment in transmutation begins tomorrow. The throwback is excellent for experimental humanization. Gentle at times, then savage and frightening. The timid natives question my sanity, but I pay them well and they do their work. I have undertaken glandular injections and brain surgery in an improvised operating room and laboratory. The natives watch me with embarrassing awe. The nerve graft operation is a success. The electroencephalogram indicates that the brain tracings are becoming more human each day. My subject is more gentle now, shows little ferocity, and regards me searchingly as if I were a curious jungle creature like himself. I have performed plastic surgery to give him all the aspects of a civilized human being. The results exceed all expectations. I have named him Noel. The speech center in the left cerebral hemisphere is now fully developed. I have succeeded in teaching Noel how to articulate words. He learns slowly. Now my only worry is whether the higher functions of the cerebral cortex can be stimulated to recreate a sense of right and wrong. Today I caught him as he was about to crush a little bird in his big hands. I have reoperated on Noel's brain and there is no change in his mental atavism. I have decided that the proper environment might bring complete success. I'm going to take him to my chateau in France. St. Etienne, France. Madelon has accelerated the progress of my experiment to an amazing degree. Her kindness and patience have completely won Noel's trust. He's become almost slave-like in his devotion towards her.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
Some like movies.
And hey, Jeff Omega.
Ape together, weak. Apes together, strong.
Well, Trisha's going to miss out on Dr. Renault's secret, but we know the secret, and we're going to tell you all about it in this week's episode, which is a fan challenge this week by @OwlHouseFan1 on Twitter.
Cool.
So if there's any reason for you guys to follow us on our social media, that's a good one, because we might make it a future episode. Follow us @InvasionRemake on Twitter, or you can email us invasionremake@gmail.com or Facebook Invasion of the Remake there. And we've even done some because of Instagram. We're also Invasion of the Remake there. So send us your requests. If we like what you're putting down, it might become a future episode, just like this week's episode.
Great recommendation this week.
I just want to say thank you because it was only like 58 minutes, which was like awesome.
It was, but it just kind of stops. There's a lot of potential for more drama. Like the whole time I was like, okay, this is a whodunit when you've got it figured out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's needed more time. It introduced all these characters and didn't really go anywhere with them. And you got sort of half-assed backstories.
Yeah, you could tell they didn't go anywhere with them because they didn't even bother giving them a credit.
Or names.
Yeah. Or names. You have the major bad guy in this film, no film credit, none whatsoever.
If you look on IMDb, you can't even find him.
No.
Like his character's not even in there.
No. So we're going to do our best to put this together for you and figure out the cast. Dr. Renault's secret is a lab experiment, but this is also a murder mystery. Lab experiment, kind of obvious, murder mystery. very obvious. So we're going to try to shake things up a little bit.
Unfortunately, it was very obvious, and they did a great MacGuffin at the beginning and then completely and utterly wasted it.
Yeah, I was actually really thinking that they would lean way more into the, like, Rajel as the murderer angle, like, setting it up as a misdirect where you thought it was.
Yeah, you keep thinking that.
Thought it was Noelle, but...
Yeah, well, you never thought that, but that's what you wanted to have happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that would be the typical murder mystery angle. The most obvious guy isn't going to be the guy. You know, the ex-con that's, okay, the doctor's trusts in, but is pretty shady. We can have some fun with that by rounding out the characters of this town that really aren't getting their just desserts. They introduce a lot of characters, but we should be introducing motive along the way as well. We jumped right into Remake.
How much of almost a non-character the like the main character, Dr. Larry Forbes? I liked how much of almost a non-character he was.
Really, you're right. He was a bit of a non-character. He's like, he's there to look handsome and smile knowingly.
Well, he did.
That's his role.
He was the big reveal guy for what Dr. Renal's secret was, which I'm going to tell you right now was taking an ape, shaving him down, operating on his brain, and turning him into a man.
You know what? Out of the whole movie, that whole sequence, like I was like, here comes this, just a boatload of exposition to explain the twist of the movie. But that was probably one of the more affecting parts of the movie. It was surprisingly creepy.
Yeah, but we kind of all saw it coming.
Oh, yeah. You know, but just the way they handled it with the music and then him looking through the photos, and you see like this ape through various stages of this guy operating on him.
I love how he,
on his face.
I love how he writes about Noelle almost crushing a bird and having to stop him, and they managed to take a photo of it. Like it is the Instagram generation. Well before Instagram. No, don't stop him. Let's stop and take a photo first.
Well, and how big of a secret is it if he has like a personal photographer for the whole thing too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he killed everybody that actually knew the secret.
See, now that would have been a better secret. It's not about the gorilla. It's about the fact that all the crimes that he committed to keep this particular secret.
Exactly.
Yeah, you could make it so the twist of the movie is actually that Dr. Renault is the murderer who's trying to preserve the secret of people finding out what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that would give that end fight sequence between him and Larry a lot more meaning, because now that Larry knows, he feels like he has to kill Larry.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot, actually. That's like a much better angle for the movie than what was the case.
Yeah, you're right, Jay. We're already moving into remake territory here.
Well, and I kind of figured we would when, after watching this movie, it's only 58 minutes. The setting is this small town that's having a celebration.
Bastille Day?
Bastille Day, yes, because it was a French town, despite the fact the French accents were rare.
There was one French accent,
guy,
and it was not good.
Yeah, the drunk guy.
It was the first guy. Yeah, truck guy.
The drunk guy that gets killed. in a very 40s way.
The drunk guy was another American.
Oh, was he American?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were that's why when he was murdered, they were like, well, it might have been targeted towards you, but it might have been him as well, because Americans carry a lot of money.
How did he go stay in the wrong room when he had the key to his room?
what's the use of having
a key that you have to switch?
If
none of the rooms are locked.
Was because they actually kind of established that, believe it or not. Because I asked the same question that I saw what happened is they don't lock them when you're not in them. The key is so you can lock it once you're in your room. And they actually show Larry doing that, as he checks the door and it's unlocked, and then he goes in and then he locks the door from the inside.
That just might be an older hotel thing where it was more common to have rooms that lock from the inside at a hotel, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe it's a European thing back in the 40s. And let's talk about the fact that this was made in 1942 during World War II and was set in France.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
So, yeah, I was kind of amazed by that. I'm like, that's really interesting that they would do that. And that's clearly why it wasn't shot in France and why it looks like it was shot on a studio lot.
Yeah, it definitely looks
like the director
like
of the movie is French, from what I gathered. He was like a French painter who dabbled in movies for 10 years or so before going back to painting. But he lived in L.A., moved from France. So maybe that's why it took place in France.
Well, this was the director's last film as well.
Yeah, he died in the 70s. Apparently, he just made a handful of movies and just decided that he liked painting better and then just painted landscapes and stuff. Like, his art's, you know, it's French Impressionist. Well, it's not that interesting.
He was, I think this guy was there really from the birth of film, too. He saw it. He was born in the 1800s. So by the time of 1842 or 1942, he was probably already in his 60s. So he was enjoying retirement in his later years. And I totally understand that. All right, well, let's run the brief trailer here for Dr. Renault's Secret. Much like these 40s films, it's half music, but there's a little bit at the end there. So enjoy the wonderful orchestra, and we will talk more Dr. Renault's Secret.
You tried to kill Dr. Forbes at the inn last night.
No.
Don't keep lying to me. For years I've worked to change your appearance, make you talk. Yet you endanger all I've done for the sake of your stupid animal jealousy.
It was the same criminal who tried to kill you at the inn.
But why should anyone want to kill Larry?
Where's Noel?
You surely don't suspect him.
And that was the trailer for Dr. Renault's Secret from 1942, based on the novel by Gaston Leroux called Baloo. He also penned Phantom of the Opera. You may have heard of it. There was other productions of Baloo as film. The earliest one was 1913, a 24-minute short. But it's hard to consider this a remake, and you've like more than doubled the time. And even then, there was still lots of room in this movie for more time. It was a pretty short movie, even for 1942.
Yeah, and when you read it, they say that it is very loosely based on Baloo. It's not really – it's inspired by rather than being based on the source material.
Yeah, and you're not going to find the 1913. It's going to be really tough. I tried. I'm like, hey, 20 minutes. I can deal with 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the other film that was based on it is Lost. It's one of the Lost films, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's called The Wizard.
The final print got lost in the Fox fire.
Oh, okay.
And there's photos of it. If you look him up, the gorilla man looks demonic. He looks like a devil, like a red devil, except instead of red paint, it's black paint. And he wears like a furry gorilla suit. And he has like Nosferatu teeth. It's kind of chilling.
Well, I think they're probably going for that more baboon tone of skin, even though it would have been a black and white movie. I don't know why they bothered, but...
Yeah, the... first one from 1913, the title was, I think, Baloo, the Demon Baboon.
That's great.
It's a great title.
Yeah. So this screenplay was by William Bruckner, who is best known for doing scripts for the Lone Ranger TV series and Maverick. I love both those westerns. Did a lot of westerns. And Robert F. Metzler, who did Riders of the Purple Sage and Sundown Jim, or westerns. But, you know, westerns... especially in the 40s and 50s, was the genre.
It was bread and butter stuff, yeah.
Yeah. This is directed by Harry Lachman, who also directed Dante's Inferno in 1935, and The Loves of Edgar Allan Poe from 1942, same year as this film. And this stars J. Carroll Nash, or Nash. There's an I in there.
Yeah, but it is pronounced Nash.
Nash? Okay. J. Yeah. Carroll Nash as Noel, and he was actually in the 1943 Batman film, if anybody even knows that exists. If you didn't, you do now. We also talked about him maybe when we did episode 21.
The Beast with Five Fingers. He was the Five Fingers. I don't know if he was or not. I'm just making that up.
I would love to believe it.
He was the thumb.
He was only the thumb. Somebody else was the index finger. Shepard Strudwick was Dr. Larry Forbes. He was in All the King's Men in 1949 and Joan of Arc in 1948. Lynn Roberts was Madeline Renault, the niece of the titular Dr. Renault. And she was in the Lone Ranger film prior to the TV series and DOA from 1949, which I promise we will cover someday because I keep threatening to do that and I have a copy of it in my library. George Zucco somehow got shafted way down in the credits. At least he got one. And he plays Dr. Renault, Dr. Robert Renault. He should be the title character.
He's like, it doesn't even matter. Not even barely part of the story.
It does take a while for his character to show up, but the general rule, if the movie's named after your character, then you're the star.
Oh, yeah.
You would think.
He was in Mad Monster and Fog Island. Never heard of either one of them, but I kind of want to see both of them.
He was also in a couple of the Universal Mummy films.
Yeah, I saw that as well. He was actually well-versed in the 40s and 50s horror stuff. Burt Roach was the hotel proprietor. They didn't bother to give him a name, but they do say it during the film. I actually don't remember his name. He was Burt Roach, and he was in Lady on a Train. For some reason, Eugene Borden was credited as the coroner. I don't remember a coroner. Maybe he was supposed to be the inspector.
Maybe. Yeah, those credits made zero fucking sense.
Now, we may have mentioned him in episode 234.
Muddy Joe Young.
And there was another one you found that I didn't in my initial notes. What was that?
He was in episode 101. We might have mentioned him in The Fly.
The Fly. And then there's Jack Norton, who is Mr. Austin, who is the first body in this movie. And he was in Malice in the Palace.
Okay. Did you notice?
Yeah, it's a great title. It's a Three Stooges movie.
Did you notice in his credits how many times he was credited as the drunk or the barfly?
I didn't. That was a specialty?
It was a specialty. He did 198 films has 198 credits in his IMDb. Mm-hmm. 74 of them he was credited as a drunk or a barfly. And at least 10 more times he was a bartender.
Wow. That guy went to a lot of AA meetings.
He is a very good drunk, and it's clearly his specialty, but I found that hugely entertaining when I noticed. I'm like, wait a minute, there's one, two, three. I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to count these now.
Do you think that he went to bars and just pretended to be drunk, like on a lark?
Hey, why not? You have that kind of talent. Why not?
Fun fact, he invented Alcoholics Anonymous.
Really?
I made that up.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that would be insane.
That would be. I don't know where that was birthed, but I'd like to think Jack Norton had a hand in it.
Yeah, but I thought that was fun.
Yeah, and we have some other characters that don't get a screen credit. There's Louis the barman, who actually has lots of dialogue and at the beginning and shows up again at the end. Let's not forget Regale the gardener, who is the chief suspect in these murders, and rightfully so.
He's played by Mike Mazurki, who is like one of those, I've seen that guy in that thing that one time, guys. He was like a henchman or like a big toughy in
tons
of movies. Yeah. This was one of his first, like within the first handful of roles that he did in that type of character. But he was also a pro wrestler and a football player. So pretty cool. Pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that he was in something we've already covered there, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was accredited as a minor in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Oh, boy, who wasn't in that movie?
He was also in like Some Like It Hot. He was actually the first villain in the first Dick Tracy movie in 1945, Split Face. But he was also in the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy movie in the 90s. So
no
he really
shit.
Had a long career.
Wow. That's crazy. There was also the barber, Marcel. He doesn't get a credit either. So I wanted to mention all those characters because they're important because Marcel gets murdered.
As does the bartender, Louis.
Yeah,
Louis?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Louis.
Yeah. I didn't cast them because I couldn't find their names and I was getting tired and frustrated. So I stopped. But they should be cast.
Yeah, because, you know, this is a pretty basic murder mystery. Guy comes into town flaunting his cash a little bit. This is a rich American, and that's initially what makes him a target. At least you think so. Which they did a half-assed job of maybe misdirecting that it could be a jealous love in the background of Noel the ape man who's fallen in love with Madeline, but it's more of like a loyalty puppy love kind of thing, protective of Madeline.
Like a King Kong Fay Wray kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Jeff already kind of mentioned, or maybe it was you mentioned this, sort of it does have that Frankenstein sort of misunderstood monster vibe to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally does. And Noel does get treated poorly. I mean, he's an ape trying to learn to be a man. He learns very slowly. His attention span is like a goldfish.
Yeah.
And but he doesn't take to being insulted or having people he cares about insulted either.
No. And I mean, Renault whips him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And physically beats him, which I don't know if you've ever trained an animal, but that is the wrong way to train any type of animal, let alone a human being or somebody you want to behave like a human being.
And cages him.
And cages him, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of the story that should still be here. Here's this abusive master who took a peaceful animal out of its habitat and turned him into a human being against its will, and it is miserable.
Yeah, like at one point, Noel even is talking to him, and he's like, why did you do this to me? Like, I remember good times. And he's just like, ugh, good times. What do you know?
Yeah, and you want to play off on that a little bit more. We want to show how morally corrupt Renault truly is, right? Regardless of whatever benevolent intentions he had when he started the experiment, they have since gone out the window.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like what would your goal even be other than just to see if it could be done?
Well, I mean, you could look at it in the aspect of evolution as like, well, can I prove that human beings evolved from primates by basically changing a primate into a human being? I think maybe that's something that needs to be sort of explained, is why is he doing this particular experiment? Because what's the value in it otherwise?
Yeah. And there should be questions of ethics of doing such a thing. Like, okay, maybe there wasn't a lot of ethical scientific experimentation in the 40s, but it's something you certainly got to think about now.
I mean, there's one thing that I was reading about from the 80s where when all of the Dolly, the sheep stuff was happening in terms of cloning, basically there's this thing where they've known for a while how you could clone monkeys, which are much closer to people, and they have since cloned monkeys. But basically for a long time, people have known theoretically how to splice monkey and people DNA to try to create some sort of human ape hybrid. And it's theoretically possible, but it's something that nobody wants to touch because of the implications of doing an experiment like that.
No, there are some pretty horrendous implications of doing that. I mean, you're essentially creating a new species.
Yeah.
Through genetic manipulation. And that's a pretty terrifying concept in and of itself.
I almost wonder if you could, I mean, if we're going to remake it anyway, if that's the kind of the route you might want to take, is rather than turning an ape into a man, like a man trying to create a, I don't know. Maybe there's something there.
It's scientifically, it makes more sense to look at it from that angle. Is the genetic manipulation rather than taking an existing animal and trying to make it human.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe there's sort of an Aryan type of thing about Renault where he's trying to make a superhuman by combining and genetically manipulating a new form of human being that doesn't meet his expectations, which is why you see the mistreatment of it, is because it's like, it's not what I wanted. It's slow, it's stupid, it's strong, and it's loyal, but that's all it has going for it. And is it loyal because out of fear, or is it loyal because of its animal nature?
One thing that I really liked about this movie is while it does fail in some ways, it does raise a lot of really interesting considerations, I'd say. Like the J. Carroll Nash playing Noel did a really good job kind of trying to inhabit like how an ape walks and how he looks around. And you could believe that he was a person who used to be an ape, who's trying to figure out how to be more like a person. And all that is really, really interesting ground. Something that definitely you could exploit and explore a lot more.
I agree with you on that one. I liked his performance was really subdued when you really think about it, because he could have gone quite over the top with sort of the ape-like mannerisms, but they're really subtle, but they're there, especially the way he walks, because he kind of had that gorilla shuffle when he walked. And I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. And his facial expressions.
Actually, it was pretty impressive in that tree as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he jumped out that window.
Yeah.
And Leo was saying, judging from his costume, she was thinking that the way that the cut of the suit jacket that he wore looked like it might have been like intentionally cut to hunch his shoulders forward. Because he does it quite a lot. That would be something that, you know, maybe it was just really good body acting. But she was saying, you know, it didn't look like his suit was crumpling forward if you were to hunch your shoulders forward like that. So there's probably some interesting padding. And
oh, yeah.
There was probably some interesting cinches and stuff in place underneath his clothing to make him have more of an ape-like stature and gait.
I think there was also things put under his lips to make them protrude a little bit more. And I'm not sure if he normally had that beetle brow, but, you know, his makeup was pretty solid.
His makeup was actually really good.
So you immediately go, there's something a little off about this guy, even if you don't know what the secret is when you start watching the movie.
Yeah, actually, Leah, I didn't tell her. I kind of buried the lead. I was like, I'm not going to tell you what this is about. And at first she was like, are those prosthetics? Is there something weird with this guy? Or is this like pretty racist? It's like, no, it's fine. Like, you'll figure it out.
Those are interesting questions to have, 60, 70 years later.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that I think I would have enjoyed this movie more if I hadn't have already known what the central conceit is of the film with Noel being a gorilla. It kind of did ruin that little bit of surprise for me.
Yeah, that was the selling feature after all.
Yeah, but I still enjoyed it. I think the performances were quite good, given the fact that they were supposed to be French and they all spoke in American or English accents. And that's one thing I've changed in my casting is I'm not going to bother. It doesn't matter where it is, but I decided to keep a little hint of the French and thought about moving to New Orleans because you have that and you have the bayou and then you can have a little bit of the French influence there.
Yeah, I didn't think this, as far as the city, it didn't make a damn bit of difference where it was. I think it was just because it was a French writer that wrote the initial source material that they made it France, but doesn't really matter where it happens. And if you think of unethical science, you can put that almost anywhere these days.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. I put it in the bio just because when I first started thinking about my casting, I was thinking about France and I'm like, oh, I know who I want my Rochelle to be. And I'm like, and I built my entire cast around that. And that's why I decided, you know what, let's put it in Louisiana. Cause then you can sort of have the French Cajun type feel to it,
right?
But you can also still have the American accents in there. It just fits better.
That's a good setting for horror that I don't think you really see exploited as often, but the culture there lends itself to pulpy type storytelling just because of the way that society developed over there.
Well, the way we perceive it more than anything else, I think that's like any place where you've never sort of visited, you kind of have this perception of it from film and television. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially when you're looking at a film like this where you kind of want that feel. You want the sort of – you have that mix of urban and versus rural and quite possibly even backwater, especially with the bayou. The environment itself has so much color and character with it because it's – you've got the snakes and the gators and the big trees and water. It's just – it just feels like it lends itself really well to a story like this.
And this could be fun because we could see hints of Renault's secrets, multiple secrets, because you can't think he just – did genetic manipulation on an ape, or, you know, if he's crossbreeding or whatever, maybe Noel.
His failures out in the bayou?
Yeah, he's maybe like dumping the bodies. Some maybe aren't dead, or they escape from captivity. And part of what Noel and maybe even Rigel, their job is to recapture these things before they're discovered.
Kind of doing like an Anton Arcane thing from Swamp Thing.
Oh, I was definitely. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think we're headed in the right direction here, guys.
You could go into something, if it is going to be Cajun, there's like so many interesting offshoots of like Baptist type Christianity over there, but in this really strange way where you could even fold in, I don't know, like
a snake handling
motivations,
a snake handling priest. He makes some sort of false deity for this mad priest who's never actually been ordained. That could be interesting. If you're going to make this weird Agatha Christie murder mystery, let's fill it up with weird characters. So a snake handling priest. Sure. I mean, I would love the barber Marcel to actually be a gangster front, and Rigel has a connection there and is working that angle that he had planned, but he's like, oh, I can make more money if I just cut out my boss, literally.
I was actually thinking about going the other way with Rogel. Instead of making him the villain, make him the good guy.
I don't mind him being a bad guy, but I don't want him to be the bad guy.
Well,
I would want him to be like, you think he's going to be the bad guy, but actually you're going to be ashamed for judging him so much.
Yeah. Well, we could definitely subvert expectations and have him go the other way. Like if he's being forced to do something like Marcel, and maybe the barber is the go-between, or not the barber, the butler. I totally forgot to mention the butler. He's a big character.
Yeah, he is. And he gets blackmailed by Rogel.
Yeah. So if we flip that
on its ear and have the butler and the barber sort of kind of forcing Rogel to stay in the criminal life that he's trying to leave behind after being arrested.
Yeah. So if the butler's gotten in with this gangster, because there is this rich doctor that can be exploited. Hey, if you want to keep your secret, you got to throw us a little cash from time to time.
Yeah. I like that idea.
And you could, just to flip it on its head a bit, because I've just been thinking about Dr. Renault's motivations. You could have something where, if it's going to be in Louisiana, you could have him be a part of one of these like weird fringe religions, but his goal is to like disprove evolution. He's like, well, if that's what people think, I'm going to make an ape man. Like, knowing that it's not going to work out in the way that people think, just kind of like this weird hottie. Like, he has to look into that corner just to disprove it for himself, but he doesn't really fully comprehend like the ramifications of his actions. And
well, if you evolution in a species, it's not going to evolve the same way as it would naturally, because it's also being informed by environment.
Yeah. And I like the idea of Renault being a pure scientist. And I like the idea of the conflict of science versus religion, which is where Jay's idea of the snake handling priest works really well, because you have that comparison of the two polar opposites.
Yeah, Renault's got his fingers in all aspects of this town somewhat. Maybe he's using the gangsters to get some things he can't get otherwise, and they're helping him cover up a secret or getting him exotic animals. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
What time period do we want to set this into?
You know what? I feel like, weirdly, it would be great if it was like kind of pseudo-contemporary, but maybe like a 90s period piece. Not just because of True Detective, but that's kind of when – that was like a time where science was kind of just progressing at this crazy clip, but also so was corruption within like biker gangs and stuff.
Yeah. And the science was questionable sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Like the motivations behind it. So yeah, I like that idea of keeping it sort of pseudo-contemporary, like you said. Yeah, kind of not today, but definitely more modern than the 1940s.
Yeah, I kind of like that too.
Yeah. What if we make Larry, instead of him being a doctor, maybe he's a cop? Because I saw no value in him being a doctor.
You know, we could merge him as characters. That's going to really screw up my casting, but that's fine. I mean, we could merge him with the inspector, but I don't mind him being the guy that discovers the science aspects of it while you have somebody else working the crime. And then there is some sort of work together.
Well, the reason I'm thinking cop, I mean, I could be way off base here for sure, but I mean, the inspector kept asking him to come to these crime scenes, but without establishing what kind of doctor he was.
Yeah.
Like it felt really weird and forced. But if he were like a New Orleans detective, or like an LA detective, or Chicago, wherever you want him from.
Like a forensic analyst.
Something like that. Yeah. Where it made sense for him to be there as a colleague. Because really, Larry didn't discover any science. He read a journal, and the journal laid out everything for him. There's no science involved in his discovery whatsoever. So yeah, I mean, he doesn't have to be a doctor. But if you want to delve more into science, then yeah, it would make sense to have him be like some sort of genetic biologist or something like that.
Like, basically, you have to answer the question of, like, why does Dr. Renault invite him there? And if Dr. Renault doesn't want his secret discovered, why does he bring in an outsider?
Well, we know why he's there. His niece, who he's raised, is getting married to him. We know why he's there.
Now, that motivation was set up right at the beginning of the story. Yeah, and we'll keep that for sure.
Yeah, the celebration, like, it should be a wedding rather than this Bastille Day or whatever.
Yeah, it made no sense to have that. You're right. Like, why are you celebrating a festival when there's this big wedding and everybody thinks so highly of Dr. Renault?
Yeah, and it that way you can constrain it between – they did try to keep the setting between the bar and Renault's estate. And you could still do that under the circumstances. But if you move the wedding into the town rather than on the estate, then he can keep his secrets more. And you have more opportunity to round out the characters in the town because we want more motivations bouncing around all over the place. And you can't do that if you're constrained to the estate.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you already sort of mentioned that, yeah, the doctor is sort of using the town to accomplish the things he can't do himself. So he's part of the community in a very large way. So it makes sense for him to want to have the wedding at the parish church or like the community halls or wherever you want to put it. But it makes sense for it to be in town because of his connection to the town.
I have a weird idea. You guys might not like this one. What if Madeline's complicit? Because the Dr. Renault has no children. She's got eyes on the estate herself.
And I like
looking
the idea
to murder the uncle and is pushing Noelle to do it.
I wanted her to be so much more than a damsel in distress like she is in the original. It's a tired old trope. I think the idea of having her be villainous is a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah. I actually wanted to make the inspector female and make her the kind one. I mean, Larry would be suspect about everybody. He's the outsider. He doesn't know anybody. But you do need somebody who's going to be kind to Noelle.
I mean,
yes, you do. Absolutely.
Go the direction of something like, there's proof that movies like this can be successful. Something like Knives Out, where like every character is a little bit reprehensible other than like Noelle, who is like the monster. That's kind of like Frankenstein a little bit too. I like the idea of basically making a movie where you can't really root for anybody in particular, and everybody has potential to be like the person who's doing the murders, basically.
Well, and you nailed it because Knives Out is definitely my model for this, combined with the monster movie. And I wanted to have lots of reprehensible characters. But I also found Knives Out pretty predictable too. It went exactly the way I thought it was going to, and which is a shame for a murder mystery. But at the same time, the ride through that movie was fantastic. So I kind of want to be a fantastic ride, even if you've got it figured out. But I want the motivations going all over the place. And one thing might not be connected to the other. And maybe not everybody's connected to the same crime.
I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. That's what I kind of wanted to see from the original, is I wanted Rogel to be the one who killed the drunk American.
Yeah.
Desperately, I wanted him to be the one because it made sense. They set that up. Mm-hmm. And then have Noelle sort of being smarter than you realize and trying to pin these murders on Rogel after he sort of starts taking offense to the way they're treating him. I like the idea of him being smart enough to try and frame Rogel for crimes he didn't actually commit. I like that whole concept.
And then you could go the route of like a Frankenstein type thing where there's like this implication that just because he can't speak and articulate himself incredibly well doesn't mean that he hasn't started to have a very brilliant mind and way of thinking of things. Like, he was depicted as being really slow, but you could have it where the doctor's like, oh, it should have been more successful in this way, and I don't know why. And it could be because Noel has the wherewithal to realize that if he shows everybody how smart he actually is, then that's dangerous for him. It's safer for him to continue to not show his full hand.
And play dumb, quite literally.
Yeah, and I like that because this is a kind of a Usual Suspects kind of scenario at this point. So the guy you least expect to be the smartest man in the room, which means he would also probably be aware of Madeline's manipulations, the ones we are creating for our movie, and utilizing that to his advantage as well.
I mean, certainly, he could be more protective over Madeline and fawning over Madeline as a way of like self-preservation, because the way that he's seen it, she's the most likely to be the one who will be in charge of him.
Mm-hmm. Or will eliminate him when she gets the estate because she doesn't want to be responsible for his care anymore, not realizing that he doesn't need care.
Well, if she's using him partially as a bodyguard anyway, creating that loyalty in him, then she's got no reason to get rid of him because He serves a purpose as a protector.
What would you think of the idea of, like, Dr. Renault is much older, and then aging up Madeline to be more in her, like, 40s or 50s, and the doctor tells everybody that Noelle is her son. Like, that's the conceit.
If you're using the wedding as a thing, yeah.
It kind of undoes that, yeah.
I mean, older people get married too, but I'd rather kind of keep her younger. I don't want to age her past her 30s.
Yeah, no, and that's where I went as well.
It makes more sense for Noelle to be, like, basically put forth as a family member that they take care of. It doesn't have to be her son, but maybe like a nephew or something.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I like the idea of him being Renault's servant. Because he would show up all of a sudden out of nowhere kind of thing where he's brought in. Because they even say that he had only been there for a little while. Yeah. And I mean, with my casting, my Dr. Renault isn't that old. Because I'm thinking, well, if her parents are gone, maybe he's like the oops, younger brother of her parents.
Because if he was like a family member, you could do it more along the lines of like, first you think that you're just seeing like a strange backwoods family where the patriarch is a scientist. And basically playing with that like trope of inbred relative kind of thing that you might get in that kind of setting.
I would say that would be a good cover. And maybe some of the townsfolk might believe that, especially in the 90s. I don't think that should be the truth, though. That would be a very
good presentation, though. Yeah.
The person, the main character going into it, it's kind of like it's basically presenting a picture on the outside to the main character and the audience. And doing a thing where as more and more layers are peeled back, the more complicated it gets. And there's like a lot of this labyrinthian kind of cover-up thing going on. Kind of similar to like the family mystery in Girl with a Dragon Tattoo that Mikael Blomkvist investigates.
We could
certainly if you want Mr. X, that'll help.
we could add another one to Rigel and make him like Renault's bastard son.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Renault doesn't even know.
Yeah. I like that a lot. That kind of feeds into the Renault world that we're building, where he is morally reprehensible in the end. I see him being sort of like an elegant but slightly decaying mansion kind of thing, like one of those you see so often in movies, but where he is the economy for this town.
Yeah.
Like just to reference another movie, like where Roadhouse, where the one guy sort of runs the whole entire economy for an entire community. And that's Renault. Is everything he does is what keeps this town thriving.
So yeah, his fortunes aren't just in science, but real estate and everything else.
Yeah, he is the patriarch of the entire community, which is why he's so well revered in the community when people don't realize how reprehensible he actually is.
Yeah, so you've got revenge plots.
Have a bunch of twists and stuff throwing him in there. So like there's this thing where like H.P. Lovecraft, when he was growing up, like both of his parents died in an insane asylum, but he was basically raised by his two aunts. And they were basically the last of like an old blood family where they used to be like a well-known aristocratic family in the area that thought they were better than everyone. But by the time it gets to him, they're basically running out of money. You could have a thing where like he controls the town. He does a lot of this stuff. But he's the only person who knows that he doesn't actually have as much money as everyone thinks that he does. He has enough money to do everything he wants to do. But after he's going to be gone, there's not really going to be much left. And that's something that Madeline doesn't know. But she's trying to get his fortune.
Well, Madeline's also smart enough to marry another rich doctor. So she's got both bases covered. But by the end of this, he's not going to want her either.
No, and I like that idea. I like the idea of our outsider being the one who sees all the truths about this town.
Yeah, well, if we have him and the inspector separate and the inspector female, then we could have that working relationship that might butt into more as he discovers these truths about everybody in this psycho fucking family and not wanting to get married. But he still winds up in a better place with somebody who's actually going to be worthwhile.
Yeah, and I like the idea of all those experiences making him question what he does as well. Mm-hmm. Like he's an experimental doctor as well, I would think. And if he sort of sees what's happening with Renault and what Renault's done, he's like, okay, is what I'm doing the right thing? Because like you said, you kind of want everybody to have sort of questionable pasts and questionable things that they've done. And I like the idea of him having done that as well, but coming to the realization that he did do something questionable and needs to be better.
And you also need somebody who's going to help these mutants out after it's all said and done. You know, you can't just leave these mutations high and dry. We're just assuming Noel might be the only smart one. He might not be. We've already established we're going to have other creatures and stuff in our movie. And even if they are still simple animals, there's still a moral implication there.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, especially because we have sort of expanded it. You're right. And yeah, and I see Larry being the type of person who takes on that responsibility and decides to find a way to take care of them without considering the scientific ramifications of it that would be part of his nature as it is, mm-hmm. right? Where he just does the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. I mean,
you think
Noel
might be a little bit too complicated to throw into it, but I mean, you were talking about something that he wants like redemption for. It could be something that he's like been disgraced as a doctor, but it's for something that he doesn't feel disgraced over. I was just thinking along the lines of like a Dr. Kevorkian kind of thing where...
Well, I know I don't want him to be looking for redemption. I want him to make a realization that his own work is sometimes maybe not the best moral path to be on. And he makes that connection and decides that he wants to be better. That's all. I don't want him to be seeking redemption because at the beginning of the movie, I don't think he thinks he's done anything wrong.
Yeah. No, I think where maybe some of his colleagues are questioning the path he might be on and he's on maybe a slippery slope. And this is his wake up call before things get really bad.
Exactly. Right. And I mean, that just feeds what Jay was saying about everybody sort of having this unlikable quality about them. And I kind of want Larry to have that as well.
Yeah. I need some characters to have a redemption story.
Right. And that's Larry. And then you have your inspector who is the only genuinely good person in the whole community.
Yeah.
And she knows what's going on, but she can't prove it.
I was just thinking like if he was controlling the town and everything to that extent, I almost feel like it would make more sense if the law was complicit with like ignoring some of the things that do go on in the town. Maybe she's like a good person, but she understands that, you know, bikers are dangerous, but at the same time, you don't shit where you eat. So it's good to have them around. And she permits like the illegal activity to happen.
She's not in charge. She's the inspector.
Yeah.
Like she would still answer. I mean, it's a small town, but she's a small town sheriff or whatever. She still answers the mayor. The mayor's the one covering shit up. Even if it's not Renault,
and
protecting
maybe
Renault,
and maybe she's not from the parish. Maybe they because it's such a small parish,
they have to bring somebody in
death,
from the outside.
They have to call somebody in from New Orleans.
Yeah, that right? makes sense.
Or Baton Rouge or wherever you want to call them in from. But from one of the larger communities where it's a state thing rather than a parish thing.
That makes sense.
You could almost move the main character, like still have Larry be a main character, but make the main character, you know, from the point of view of like a young. Yeah, like this young person who's within the system of this local police force, that maybe she's been put there because, you know, wherever she is, she kind of stirs up trouble, puts her nose where it doesn't belong. So they just put her into a small community as punishment. Like, oh, if you're going to act this way, we're going to put you in the middle of nowhere and, you know, debt low in the totem pole.
I'm not in for that one. That's one too many steps. I think we got enough complex characters that we keep her simple.
Yeah.
She should be brought in from the outside.
Yeah.
She should be the one we don't know a lot about as a whole, because all we need to know about her is she's the investigator. It's like Knives Out with Daniel Craig. We don't know much about him and his backstory. He's been hired to investigate. And that's it. That's his function. And he is non-judgmental.
He's our investigator needs to be sort of our point of hope, I guess, is the best way of putting it.
And impartial. And it's like they're the one piecing everything together. And we need somebody to speak for the audience.
Yes. And I didn't cast for an inspector, but I've already filled in who I would like to see there. So
great.
Like, I think that's kind of more along the lines of what I was thinking, where like Daniel Craig is not the main character of Knives Out.
No.
But for all intents and purposes, he kind of is.
Yeah, he's the central. He's the Hercule Poirot. You know, he's Miss Marple.
Yeah, he's the key character, but he's not the main character.
Yeah, and much in the way that this movie is as well. Like, key character, but I mean, it's Dr. Renault and Noel are the two main characters of this film.
Yeah, they're the driving force of the film for sure.
Yeah.
Would you want to maybe – you could do something where they're brought in because – the monsters and stuff, like the other failed experiments that like live out in the bayou or whatever. Like, some of them have been overextending their reach and their stuff, like dead animals and stuff. It's like not initially a murder investigation, and the murders start when she's already there, turns into a murder investigation.
I think we're falling in that trap of overcomplicating it because we're trying to make a fairly simple movie more engaging.
I think she's being brought in because of a murder. Now, the threat of that could still be something, because that's been constantly covered up by the town.
Mm-hmm.
or many people of the town, especially the people who work under Dr. Renault, but there are definitely going to be some townspeople who are complicit in that as well and trying to keep that as buried as possible. So you can certainly have hints of that.
You could actually have a really interesting scene, and actually this actually feeds really well to my director, is where the townspeople, or there's a sort of a weekly hunting party where they go out and they try to hunt down some of these failed experiments.
Oh, man, wouldn't that be brutal if he was gathering a bunch of rich people to hunt mutants that he's literally just created to be hunted?
Oh, that goes into a really dark place.
That is really dark.
I can't say I don't like it.
That's a whole other movie.
Film again.
Yeah.
I almost feel like it's a good idea, but it's almost a different movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's where I was saying is adding another element.
I think we got enough with all the amount of characters and stuff running around and establishing their motivations. It's going to take up a lot of screen time.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, we don't want it to be 2.5 hours either, right? It's got to stay fairly tight in order to be engaging.
This could be a pretty good meaty 2-hour mystery.
Yeah, I'm thinking between 1.5 to 2 hours. Hour 45 is probably minimum because you're going to need a lot of time and you want the characters to be engaging. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you want everybody to sort of appear likable at first, right? Like with Renault being welcoming to Larry and then sort of in their discussions finding out that maybe they're not so nice and you see things happening in the background that's sort of suggest that Renault's not the likable person that you think he is. So you need all that time to do it, to build that up before you even get into the meat of your mystery.
Yeah.
And then you have that one early death of a not inconsequential character at the very beginning of the movie to sort of set up the whole thing.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into some casting here. I think it's time. And now what? And meet our characters and find out who you've got in mind for our gigantic murder mystery of monsters.
Yes.
Sam, you want to start us off?
I will start us off happily. Just give me 1 second. Getting the book open. Okay. So for my Noel, I started with Noel because originally he was an ape or a gorilla that had been changed into a human being. I wanted somebody who we already know is good at that kind of motion. But I didn't want to go with the obvious.
I did.
Because I wanted to stay away from that. But I was somebody who was in those movies with him. I went with Terry.
Nutari.
That's it. Yes. Yeah.
It would have been my number two.
Yeah, no, I thought he'd be great in that type of role because he is familiar with the physicality of the apes.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like and to keep it as much practical makeup as we can.
Yeah, and no, I don't want this to be CGI. I would prefer for it to be as practical as possible.
Too. Like if it was CGI, it would just completely blow the lead and be like right out the gate.
Yeah, no, you just want him to sort of be human, but have some of those ape-like mannerisms. And I think that somebody who's played the ape role would be really good at that. For my Larry Forbes, and this actually works really well if we have him sort of with a sort of questionable history of his own. I'm with Miles Teller.
Oh,
Because I think he kind of has that 40s sort of leading man look, even though the leading men in 40s movies are very rarely leading. They're always there like just sort of to drive the story forward without actually contributing. That's just something I've noticed over doing this show. For my Madeline, I went with Alison Brie. Nice. So she is a little older than Miles Teller, but it still kind of feeds into Jeff's kind of idea of her being a little bit older and kind of conniving to gain her uncle's fortune. For my Dr. Renault, I went with Harry Connick Jr. I think that he would do a great job of playing the sort of kindly, welcoming doctor, but he's also played really dark and he can do both. So that, again, worked out really well for me.
That was a balance I was looking for in my casting as well.
And then I did cast Rogel, and he's kind of what inspired the whole Louisiana thing. I went with a French actor. So I went with Vincent Cassel because I think he'd be great. He's a smaller man, but he does menace really, really well. You'd know him if you saw him. I didn't think to write down anything that he's actually been in, unfortunately. And then for my sort of on the spot casting for our inspector, I want Polly Perrette. I think she'd bring a sort of a sense of fun to it as well.
Okay.
And then for my director, I wanted to put somebody who could sort of play with twists a little bit. For my director, I went with Craig Zobel, who directed The Hunt, which, I mean, a lot of people didn't like the twist at the end. I thought it was actually quite well done. So I'm like, I think he could handle sort of a smaller scale murder monster movie quite well.
Nice.
Okay. And that's it. That's my casting.
Jeff, why don't you give us your casting?
All right. So for Noel, I was actually thinking Benicio del Toro, actually. I mean, I love seeing him in movies. He's an actor who, I don't know, he plays a lot of strange, interesting roles. He's had experience doing that, you know, transforming type thing with the Wolfman. But I feel like this would be the type of role that his quirkiness could really be a plus two.
Well, and now that we've made him like actually hyper intelligent, because he does that sort of look in his eyes really well. So yeah, I kind of buy that actually.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
You know, I was just thinking, like watching the original movie, I was just kind of thinking about similar type makeup with Benicio del Toro. I feel like with a little bit of makeup, he could really bring some dimensions to that character that are really interesting. And for my Dr. Renault, I was actually thinking Jason Isaacs.
I like that.
Yes, I like that too.
And I mean, I'm one of the few people who saw A Cure for Wellness in the theater. That movie I thought was really underrated. A bit long, a bit bloated, but Jason Isaac does a really good job playing like this mad scientist in that movie. That movie is basically like a Hammer mad scientist movie from the 70s made like in 2016. Jason Isaacs is great in it, and something similar I think he could really pull off in this type of role. I was thinking for Madeline, Amy Adams.
Yeah,
you could really pull off, especially with what we've been talking about. She could play that kind of, you don't know if she's going to be like a good person or like a conniving person. She could really walk that line, I think. Because, I mean, she's been in comedies. She's been in very serious roles. She's, me and Leah were watching through Sharp Objects a while ago. And yeah, really interesting. I think that would be a good choice for her. Oh, yeah, so for Dr. Larry Forbes, I was actually thinking of like John David Washington, who is in Black Klansman and recently Tenet. He's a really good actor, up and coming. And yeah, maybe like a good principal, not terrible person. Yeah, he would be good. I mean, the character in the movie, he's like a blank slate. I feel like it'd be interesting to give him to an actor where he's like actually really good and can kind of bring his own thing to the table with it.
Nice.
So for Rogel, I was thinking, even though he's a bit older, you might be able to get away with like an Edward Norton in that role. Like, he's not super big or imposing, but he's kind of played in American History X. He's can get away with big and imposing.
Yeah, I was struggling with that as well. Whereas, like, does he need to be bigger and imposing, or does he just need to be intimidating? And I think intimidating is the key.
Yeah, and Norton does that really well.
He can be really intimidating, and he could also be a character who you get a feeling that he's fiercely independent in a lot of his roles. And I think that that's kind of a nature that would be good for that character. So I think that actually this would be a good movie because it's murder mystery and it's kind of horror like we've talked about. I think that Gillian Flynn would be a good writer for this movie, or co-writer with somebody else, the writer of Gone Girl. But ever since she did Gone Girl with David Fincher, she's become a pretty accomplished screenwriter in her own right, and she's written a few screenplays since then. Most recently, she worked with Steve McQueen, who did 12 Years a Slave, to do like a bank heist movie called Widows. Right. And she's been trying to get more jobs. She's dipped her toes in horror. I think that would be interesting to bring an actual like mystery thriller novelist, and to do the screenplay for this kind of weird movie that we've been talking about. And
that might be a first, Jay. First time we ever cast a writer?
I think we've mentioned a writers a couple of times over the years, but
it's rare.
We don't do it very often.
It's like a thing where like we're the writers, kind of, so we don't need to cast it. But yeah, I do think that she would bring a good sensibility to a movie like this, especially because a lot of stuff that she writes is pretty dark, but also interesting in a can't look away kind of way. And for my director, this is actually one I've been mulling over a lot, but I think that I did bring up A Cure for Wellness earlier. Gore Verbinski, he's a really good director, and he's had some movies that are massive hits, but he's also had movies that are like big misses. But I do think that his really interesting, like almost dreamlike quality that he brings to a lot of movies that he does would really be a benefit to a movie like this, especially in the setting.
This would be interesting because this is like a genre he hasn't really worked in before.
Yeah, I mean, the closest would be A Cure for Wellness, which is like a horror movie, like a kind of a psychological, like it really, if you haven't seen it, it's long, but it really, really, really goes into like a mad scientist horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, he did the first three of those. He did Rango. He did the Ring American remake.
Notice you're not mentioning Lone Ranger.
Yeah. Starring actual cannibal Armie Hammer. Yeah, he's had some misses, but he makes interesting looking movies. And paired up with the right writer and the right cast, I would definitely go to the theater to see him do a remake of this movie. And I would be very curious as to how he would accomplish a lot of visual flourishes on it. So yeah, that's my crazy remake of Dr. Reynolds' Secret cast and crew.
Nice. I like it. I've got a lot of people to go through, so let's go. Because as I kept going, I'm like, man, if we're going to do an Agatha Christie monster movie, we need to really fill out this fucking cast. Okay, so I think everybody guessed at this point I went with Andy Serkis's Noelle.
Nice.
Yes.
For the same reasons.
I mean, solid choice.
Yeah, for the same reasons that Sam did Natari. Except I mainly wanted Serkis because he is a broader bloke. Like, he's not very tall, but he's broad and he's got a square face. So he's probably going to...
And he's an actor too.
And he is an actor.
And that's why I'm the... Yeah. Whereas I don't know about Natari, so...
Yeah. Well, no, he's got a few on screen, but he still plays gorillas even if he's not dressed up as a gorilla. There was that weird one where he came out in it is the stilts and stuff that he would normally use for that. Got some controversy. No, it was like a weird drama, but he came out shirtless with this gear and just freaked out everybody at a dinner, and there were all these movie stars. But it was actually in a movie, but the people that were at the dinner didn't know it was a movie. As a stunt, so all the reactions were real. While he was like freaking out, like acting like a gorilla, it was so bizarre. I don't remember the name of it. I'm sure our listeners will go look it up, but it's fascinating. Anthony Mackie, I wanted as Dr. Larry Forbes, which initially I was still thinking about keeping in the 40s, so adding an angle of racism into the movie might have been an interesting thing to put in there. Not that we wanted to, but. If we kept it in the 40s around that time, that would have certainly been a real thing. But I just like him as a handsome lead, so.
You know, and I mean, I've done Anthony a few times, but he actually crossed my mind as well. But again, because I've gone to Anthony Mackie a couple times already, I'm like, no, I got to move away from him.
Yeah, I haven't used him very much, but he's a great handsome lead, and I'd like to have this likable actor in that role.
Yeah.
For Madeline, it's funny when we were talking Anton Arcane. I went with Swamp Thing actress Crystal Reed.
Nice.
Yeah. So she'll be a pretty young niece that's, and she can, I think she would be great at doing Sinister as well, since we've gone in that direction with her. For Dr. Renault, I wanted somebody on the outside who's very presentable, funny, charming, but can do menace. And I went with Bradley Whitford from Get Out and Cabin in the Woods, where we've seen both those versions, where he was very fun and likable in Cabin in the Woods, but really menacing in Get Out.
Oh, yeah. No, and he does menacing really well. And he does out and out dick really well as well.
Yeah. I thought he fit the bill really good for what I was going for. For the hotel proprietor, and much like an Agatha Christie, lots of recognizable faces, even if they're minor roles. We're going to have angles with everybody. I went with J.K. Simmons from Whiplash, Juno, multiple Spider-Mans.
And then we have our own connection because I went with Miles Teller from Whiplash. So
there we go. For Louis, the barman, just because I want to fit him in somewhere, Paul Giamatti.
Nice.
For Marcel, the barber. And now that we know we're going to do something with him as well, Alfred Molina from Frida and Spider-Man 2.
Also nice. Very nice.
For Rigel, I'm not sure if mine fits the bill. I kind of went with large and intimidating, but he's a good actor in his own right. I went with Tom Hopper from Umbrella Academy and Black Flag.
Also kind of like that.
Who plays an ape man.
Yes.
In Umbrella Academy. Initially, I didn't make the connection until just now.
Yeah, like, he might be going, fuck no, I don't get typecast as the guy who plays an ape all the time.
But he's not. He's playing Rigel.
Yes.
He'll be going, I'm glad it's not me.
Or he'll be mad that he wasn't considered for Rigel.
Yeah.
Yeah, before or I get to our...
Welcome the opportunity to pick Andy Serkis's brain on how to better exploit this new career niche he's found himself in.
Yeah, and before I get to our inspector, I wanted to round out the town with maybe a few other characters. I don't know who they'll be, but feel like we need a few more bodies here. Kurtwood Smith, William Fichter, James Cromwell, all good choices to fill out this town.
Yes.
And for our inspector, I went with Hilary Swank.
Yeah, get behind that.
Nice big name to get behind, and especially she's going to be around a lot in the movie. So
it's interesting how we connected to the same movies in some ways without actually connecting to them, because I referenced The Hunt, and lo and behold, Hillary Swank.
Honestly, The Hunt was what was in the back of my mind as well.
Casting. It's weird because they're very dissimilar movies, but there's something about the feel from them that just sort of – I can just see it sort of connecting. So in my head, there's all these little synapses firing going, yeah, there's something about that film that makes me think about this remake. Mm-hmm.
And for my director, I went with Rian Johnson because he did it so well with Knives Out. I wanted to see how he does it with Monsters.
He's another one that came across my sort of table of ideas. I'm like, oh, he would do this really well. Mm-hmm. But I like to stay away from the directors that we see all the time. Like, not the ones that we use all the time, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't use I don't think I've ever used them. Maybe I have. No,
I think I've used Rian once previously, but not even that we use so much. It's just like that's a really recognizable name.
Yeah. There's only a handful of people now who have done this type of movie.
Yeah.
And you're not sure if anybody else can pull it off. So I kind of went with the sure thing.
Yeah. And that's fair. I,
you know, they thought he was a sure thing with Last Jedi, and everyone
flipped
their lid.
Yeah.
I liked it.
But. You know, I'll stick to things like Brick and Looper. I wasn't fond of his Star Wars movie either, but I generally like his movies overall, just not his Star Wars one.
Yeah, no, I think that he's better doing his own thing rather than somebody else's franchise, pure and simple.
I think so too.
And I don't think Last Jedi was bad. I just think that it didn't fit within that universe that vision of the universe that JJ had.
Yeah, exactly. It was like we watched an alternate universe Star Wars sequel that out there somewhere, there's people who are like, they're like, wow, that middle J.J. Abrams Star Wars movie really sucked compared to the other the Rian Johnson ones or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we did a whole episode on that.
Yeah. Go listen to the episode.
Check it out.
I mean, ultimately, that movie is what it is because he had to rewrite some stuff on the fly because he lost an actor. And a lot of that stuff got shifted into the next movie. So his movie changed quite a bit. You got to forgive him for that, and he still managed to make a movie at the end of the day despite all the hurdles he had. Okay, well, you know what, I think we made a movie I kind of want to see, man. We got a good cast regardless of who we use. Good cast all around, and I think we had so many angles we had to peel back a few that it was like, oh my god, too many, one too many.
That's good.
Actually, it was two or three too many, actually.
Yeah, probably.
We managed to pair it back to the core story, which is important. One thing we didn't talk about is how does it end? Because let's talk about the ending from that original movie, which was really, really abrupt.
Yeah, we do have to give it a better ending.
Because, we kind of skimmed over that.
It really just does roll credits, doesn't it?
It does. It's like he has his poignant last line and go.
Kill, doctor, die. He gets shot and succumbs to his wounds, roll credits. Well, there weren't even any credits, but that was it. And that falls into that all movie monsters must die scenario that the 40s had, regardless of their motivations. I think he shouldn't have, but I would have liked a happier ending of him being brought back to the habitat that he was most happiest in and throwing behind his humanity. I mean, that was always his end goal for Noel, I think.
Yeah. And that's where I was thinking too, is Noel survives our movie and goes on to live a happy life, taking care of his brothers and sisters, as it were.
Yeah, relocating them into a habitat that's more hospitable to them and probably protected as well. Maybe that's where Forbes comes in.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the idea of it's sort of this whole town kind of turning on itself during their hunt for Noel, who's done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So all of these deaths are sort of other members of the town taking advantage of a situation to take out competitors or mistaken identity.
Well, no, I mean, Noel did do things wrong. He murdered people.
Yes.
but out of anger. Yeah. So he did, but those are animal instincts of an embarrassed or even cornered animal, at least in the context of this film. But if we're using him in such a way where he still winds up killing people, I think he should be killing all of the right people, as it were, the ones that are clearly evil, and he's very aware of it, and he's kind of cleaning up Renault's mess.
Yeah. Well, I almost like the idea of him being responsible for one death and only one death. I'd like to have him responsible for Renault's, mm-hmm. and Renault is actually responsible for everybody else's. Either things are starting to unravel on him, so he starts taking out witnesses, right? Like the barber and the bartender, like all these people who he's been working with are now liabilities. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how he accomplishes that, that's the question. Is does he force Noelle to do it?
Well, I think Noelle maybe being brought in to haul bodies and hide what he's done. Maybe he is being forced to do these murders and not really wanting to.
I kind of like that direction, but
yeah.
But I also like the idea of, like, say the barber gets murdered and then that makes the bartender suspicious. So he goes after the hotel owner, kind of thing, where one thing feeds another and you sort of have that sort of chain of vengeance thing that happens sometimes mm-hmm. in movies. Because like you said, you want it to be a little bit unclear as to who actually the killer is, when really they're all pretty awful.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's going to take place in the bayou, you could play around with this thing where to dispose of the bodies, you know, they're just getting fed to the gators. But because of that, if/when any remains are found, it's kind of impossible to some extent to really ascertain how they died.
Oh, I just had an idea, and I think this could work really well. Is Noelle is sent to kill one of the townspeople, the barber, the bartender, whoever you want it to be, but he doesn't kill them. He takes them to his mutant brother and sisters to hang on to as a witness against Renault. So he never actually commits a murder, but everybody thinks he did. And we don't know that until near the end of the movie.
That's an interesting angle. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Right? Because then we keep Noelle pure without questioning our ending where he ends up safe and comfortable with his family.
Yeah.
You
only need one murder to bring in the inspector. But
it's not really a murder.
Well, I mean, you need something at the beginning.
Sort of the nameless visitor to the hotel could still be the murderer.
It could still be Mr. Austin or whatever. You need that inciting incident. It's still a murder mystery at the end of the day. But with other people going missing, you think there's other murders, but with no bodies. Maybe there's evidence of wrong play or struggle because they initially don't trust Noelle and think they're getting this beast man that's going to kill them. And in the end, he's protecting them.
And setting up his own escape from Renault by gathering witnesses to his crimes.
Yeah. I still want to have that moment in the final struggle where he's injured and we cut away. We think he might die before we cut away to the happier ending.
I totally agree with that. Yes.
One more moment of misleading the audience.
Yeah.
I think that you could do it so half the murders are actual murders, but you could have two unrelated murders, one's for greed, one's for something else that is ultimately inconsequential.
Yeah, I think we should have a couple of murders. I mean, there'd be one that Rigel's responsible for, and certainly maybe some that Renault himself is responsible for before, you know, some of these people get protected. Like, I could see where Renault might kill off the barber if he's, you know, this is a gangster front. We should have a couple of bodies, but we should have the missing persons as well, that we have people assumed dead. It's a good angle, another misdirection.
You know, yes. You could do it so, like, one of the people who's murdered, so there's one person who's murdered, like, for their money or whatever. Then the second one goes missing. A third one is murdered, but then they find that person's remains, like, half eaten. And that's, like, the misdirect, where for all the other people who are missing, it's assumed that they've been, like, dumped to the gators.
Yeah, and that could set up the mystery, sort of just the mystery of it a little bit more. And it still makes you question Noel, all right? And that's the things you want, still want those questions about Noel in the mix.
Yeah, we could actually have that half-eaten guy would have been one of Renault's escaped experiments, one of the non-intelligent ones, before they recapture it or whatever. And they have to cover it up a different way. So if you make the town think there's a murderer on the loose rather than an escaped creature. I mean, you want angles pointing all over the place, but ultimately you want most of it to point to Rigel and Noelle along the way, and it's not going to be. But
in retrospect, it all points back to Renault, which that would do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm liking that.
Like, and you could have it be something where initially Dr. Renault, like, his only truly successful experiment is Noelle, and it could be that he's been keeping all of these other creatures, but he can't keep them all. And now that he's kind of gotten what he's wanted from them, he gets Noel to kill them. But Noel actually, like, saves all of his brethren, kind of establishing this thing of Renault is trying to get Noel to kill people for him. And it starts off with his failed experiments, and then that continues on to regular people. As soon as he starts finding that this creature is a tool for him to get rid of problems through murder.
Well, I think Noelle is there to clean up the failed experiments. I think Rigel's there to murder the actual people and cover up the people. And let's not forget, we got Madeline manipulating Noelle as well. So we've got all sorts of angles going on there.
Or at least Madeline thinking she's manipulating Noelle.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I would love the most, is everybody thinks that they're manipulating Noelle, but all along he's manipulating them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, which makes it all the more satisfying when he kind of gets what he wants, and all it is humanity is miserable, at least for him, and he wants to go back to where he belongs. And I think that's a good happy ending to give him.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, I think we did this very successfully. This is I was a little worried about this one because I'm like, another murder mystery. These are all kind of the same, but this wound up being a very good fan challenge. And I think we all had quite a bit of fun doing it. Now, if you
is actually exactly the type of fan challenge that I want from people, where it's a fun movie to watch. It has like a lot of good elements, but is ultimately something that has a lot of room to expand upon.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're kind of looking for. And if you have something in that ballpark where we can expand on something, the nugget of a good idea, then hey, let us know at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, or your comments. But of course, all those fan challenges as well. Lots of good stuff that you can pitch at us, and maybe it'll become a future episode, or hey, if you just want to chit-chat with us, that's okay too. But you should also spread the word. Spread it to your friends and family, friend and foe even. Let everybody know, scream it on the hilltops, Invasion of the Remake is an awesome podcast, and tell everybody on your social media to follow us, and where to find us. Sam, where can they find us?
At invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And you can find all sorts of links to all the best podcast providers there. And if it's not on the list, then just search out the one you're most comfortable with. We're probably there.
Probably.
And guess what? There's also a link to our TeePublic store on that website. Just hit the button and you can find all sorts of cool stuff. T-shirts, mugs, posters, PPE masks, and so much more. Give it a shot. Check it out. Lots of cool designs by Sam, myself, Jeff. We've all got stuff up there, and stuff even inspired by Trish. So with the Angry Fish. Trish and the Angry Fish. So check it out.
Yeah, Angry Fish.
Yeah, the Angry Fish designs were all Sam, but they were inspired by Trish's stories. So get yourself some cool invasion gear to wear on your back or front.
Or your face.
That would also be part of your front.
Nah, your face is different.
Where you wear it is up to you.
Okay.
With that, we'll catch you next week. I think we got a fan comparison next week.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we've got Women in Horror coming up after that, because it's also Women in Horror Month. And if you don't know all about Women in Horror, it is a month-long blood drive. So go support Women in Horror, watch a little bit of horror, donate to a good cause, and you might save a life in doing so. So check it out. We've got something coming up in a couple of weeks for Women in Horror. But until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I always return as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
You've discovered my secret.
Well, I can't believe it, to go to such extremes.
I am surprised that as a scientist you admit extremes.
But an ape.
You are surprised at the results of my experiment, Doctor. So will the whole scientific world be when they hear of it. I've proved my theory.
But your experiment has reverted to its primitive state. A savage killer.
I'll correct that mental aberration. It's just a temporary lapse.
Tonight he killed two simple country people. just because they ridiculed him. It's criminal to let a wild animal loose among helpless people and to expose your niece to the same danger?
I'm determined to complete my experiment.
You're mad. I'm going to phone Inspector Duval.
Stop. I've devoted many years of my life to this experiment. I'm not going to let anyone destroy it.